I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
Well, he says he's Bob Ryan. I'm Mike Lupica of MSNBC and MLB.com.
It is podcast. It's impossible to prove. I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press. Welcome to the Sports Reporters Podcast, the podcast version of the long-running TV show for many years on ESPN, where we discuss matters in the world of sports. Used to do it on Sunday mornings. Now we do it on Mondays and Fridays in the podcast form. Biggest news is that finally Bryce Harper, finally we can all rest easy. Bryce Harper has found a team.
Call off the prayer vigil, Mitch. Call off the prayer vigil.
Yes. Not only a team, a home forever and a day.
Yes.
Because we're told that all that mattered to Bryce Harper was that he go forever in his career. He doesn't want any more trades, no opting out, no anything. And meanwhile, his agent gets what he really wanted, which was the ability to say, I have negotiated the largest deal in baseball history by $5 million, $330 million for 13 years, which doesn't average out to the record, but is the biggest pot of gold since this money is generally guaranteed. Thoughts on this?
Well, first of all, that record means something only to him and or the baseball insiders who all of so much of their coverage runs through guys like Scott Boras, okay? And it's all of the stuff that we're reading today is a bunch of hoo-ha, okay? It always goes back to the wisdom of the great late great George Young, who was the general manager of the Giants, who said to me on the phone one day when we were talking about a contract negotiation in which he was involved at that time. He said, "When they say it's not about the money, it's always about the money." Okay, so he's got his record. He's got a ballpark that Bob has pointed out is made for him. And I just sent a column to MLB.com. What this really does for me is it makes the NL East the most interesting division in baseball. Because here's the thing about this deal, guys. There have been a lot of big contracts, only two for 13 years. But there's never been a guy who basically moved across the street the way Harper is moving. It's about 140 miles from D.C. to Philly. Same division. And I'm not comparing his career. I wrote this in the column. But Harper has been their Jeter in Washington. This creates an interesting, compelling, and dramatic rivalry, which, by the way, begins in Washington on April 2nd when the Phillies go in to play the Nets.
No, it's good. It's real good. And not only that, but the rest of the division, remember who the defending champion is. Nobody remembers that. No, it's a good division now. It's a fascinating division. And this, you're so right, Mike. This is a little 2-hour ride on I-95, and it's very interesting, very very interesting. And and by the way, I kept saying, and I still feel it's got to be a good ballpark for him. Did you check what the numbers are, though, so far? In 47 games at Citizens Bank, he's hitting .268 with 14 homers and 32 ribbies. OPS .930. That's more like what I thought it would be.
But Ryan, you led me to believe he was going to hit 600 home runs.
Listen, I tweeted out last night. I said, what should be the over-under on home runs this year? 52? And overwhelmingly got shot down by Vox Populi. There was definitely no, Bob. You don't get it. So but I'm still sticking, Mike. You know what you like to say. This is my story, and I'm sticking to it. That he'll adjust. He'll tell that pack apart. That's what
since he hasn't taken a swing yet, I still find it interesting the process by which this all happened. Tom Verducci wrote a pretty detailed account of it. Apparently, he had access to certainly Boras and these guys, and how many times they went out to Las Vegas and wooed Harper and sold him on the city of Philly and all the rest of it. It's apparently been going on since December, and the impasse they kept reaching was the length of the contract, that they wanted to do a 10-year contract, which seems to be a pretty standard form. Also, that what's now come out is that Washington offered him a 10-year contract for $300 million, but the money was so deferred, he would have been 60 years old when he was getting his final payment, and that the actual real value money of it was somewhere in the $180 million range, you know, today's dollars or things like that, and that he didn't want to wait that long to get paid. And then at the last minute, in the last couple of weeks, the Dodgers came forward with a very aggressive contract that I could make a very good case he should have taken. Because if what we're reading is true, it got as high as like $43 million a year for probably a five-year deal or something like that. Now, if you really are secure in your talent, and this is interesting, if you really are secure in your talent and you actually think you're going to get better, you take that deal to go play in Los Angeles with great players. You're a marketable commodity. You like to market yourself. You know, there's all kinds of deals you could have. And at 31, you're a free agent again. Instead, I find it very interesting for a 26-year-old to basically say, I don't want to ever have to think about a contract again. I want to know that my money is secured, and I want to know that I'm not going to move. I mean, he didn't even want any opt-out clauses, which is standard fare now for these kind of contracts. He apparently was the one who said no opt-out clauses. It's like he doesn't want them to think that he can go anywhere. He doesn't want to have to think about going anywhere. And this is either the mark of a guy who runs totally against what the current young thinking is, which I'm going to have six paydays in the course of my career, or maybe he doesn't have that much confidence in his own talent that he's going to always live up to this, and he wants a contract set, and he doesn't want to have to think about living up to it again. That's what I would worry about. If I was an owner and I take in the psychology of athletes, I say, why does a guy want a contract for the rest of his life and never have to think about going anywhere? Is he going to give me what I expect every single year?
Mitch, here's the thing. And we talked about this the other day. He is now, because of Scott Boras, and again, the way this sport is covered is always fascinating, how agents drive the coverage of this sport, okay? Especially with a lot of these, quote, insiders. All right. He keeps calling him a generational player. He's not. He may turn into be a generational player. And we talked about this the other day. He got to 100 RBI for the first time last year on the number 100 and hit 249. He hit more than 40 home runs once in his career. I know he's only 26, okay? But nobody's been stopping him from putting bigger numbers into the books, okay? You look at these contracts that have been given out of 10 years or more, and I may be forgetting somebody, Cano, Cabrera, Giancarlo Stanton, A-Rod, Albert Pujols, now Machado, and Harper, okay? I know why teams give them out, and we've talked about this. The Padres are trying to buy hope with Manny Machado, and I don't know if you can put a dollar value on that. But just about every one of these contracts has turned out to be stupid, okay? Cano, the Mariners couldn't wait to get out from under it. A-Rod, the Rangers couldn't wait to get out from under it. Stanton signed a 13-year deal, and he and the Marlins were no longer in business together after three. Mitch, you've seen the wreckage of the Cabrera deal with the Detroit Tigers, okay? And Albert Pujols, you know what? If John Middleton, the Phillies owner, wants to see what these contracts look like at the back end, go look at Albert Pujols right now. So financially, they're always great for the player. They hardly are ever great for the team. But now let's see if Harper can, if they can actually build a World Series team around this guy and put the Phillies back in the World Series for the first time in 10 years.
It's not like he's the only thing they've done in the offseason, as you well know.
No, that's not true. They got Segura. Right.
It's not like it's the only thing that they've
done.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
They have done a lot, and they picked up the catcher that, you know, was the reigning catcher on the market in JT Realmuto. Yep. They got a shortstop who's a better player than a lot of people realize. And I don't know what to expect out of Andrew McCutchen,
from him in New York last year.
No,
Bobby.
They do have it. But the Realmuto thing is important, and the Segura thing is important, and of course we all know that it comes down to pitching, and we'll see how that works out beyond Arrieta and Pivetta. But
remember that they've left, and he is now in an outfield with McCutchen and Herrera. He could very well find himself after next year, paired with Mike Trout, because they have left the door open with this 25. The one upside for Philadelphia is this is a $25 million average, which doesn't put him anywhere near the top 10 or anything like that when you talk about averages. And maybe in 10 years from now, paying $25 million for a productive baseball player is going to be, you know, what you get when you're when you hit 240 and 20 home runs.
Mitch, let me just interrupt you for 1 second. And it was pointed out today, and we talked about it the other day. He basically got the same contract, the same record-breaking contract, 19 years after A-Rod. So these contracts have not gone through the roof, okay? A-Rod's was $252 million for 10 years. Okay, play that out over 13 years. I think it's very frustrating to these agents that even though the revenues have increased tremendously over the last two decades, this sort of contract has really not become the norm.
Yes, that's partly true, but you know, like the stock market. If you just were to look at the stock market's total, you know, record, you can't judge it in a vacuum. It dipped for a long time in between. Yeah, when A-Rod did it, it blew up the bank. It was ridiculous, and then it you know, you didn't see 1,000 more of those contracts, and then it dipped back down, and then now it's worked its way back up again. My prediction is, given the way digital media is and given international audiences and all the rest, they're not going backwards on this thing. And they may not go rocket fast, but 10 years from now, paying a player $25 million a year in any of the three biggest sports is probably not going to be what
look,
it is now.
Look at what's happened to the middle class in the current market. Yeah. Look at how many guys are still out of work. Yeah, the top guys are going to get paid, but I'm not. This market has become extremely volatile and extremely interesting. It's not like these prices are going up and up and up and up. And I don't know if there's any evidence to indicate that over the next 10 years they're going to.
Well, if he turns into a middle-class player, you're absolutely right. They have hugely overpaid for him. They're paying for him to be a generational player, a star. And if he gets paired with a Mike Trout, which, you know, is where I began this, that they have the door potentially open in terms of they don't really have a salary cap per se, but luxury tax serves as a salary cap in baseball. They have room. You know, they said that. They said we're going to spend stupid money and we're going to get two guys, and they thought about maybe Machado and him, but really.
And by God, they spent stupid money.
Yeah,
Mitch.
Well, they spent stupid money, but they stretched it out over the years. Where they'll regret this, of course, is when he's 35, 36, 37, battling injuries, and they're still handing out that kind of money to him, but nobody ever thinks about that. For all we know, it'll be a different ownership group at that point, or somebody else will take his contract. For now, they have the possibility of, after the 2020 season, having Harper and Mike Trout on the same roster. And we all know Trout's affinity to the area, and you know they have to be considered a front runner now with Harper on the team, and that's. That's big time for Philadelphia. And as Bob pointed out, they've made some pretty good moves. So, you know, we can debate all we want the stupidity of taking a player to 39, but at the moment, he's 26. And at the moment, this is what they care about. And if they get to the World Series in the next couple of years, or they get Trout and they start to become a perennial, nobody's going to think about age 35 and 36 and 37 and 38 and 39. They're just not going to worry about it right now.
You mentioned being 35, 6, 7, battling injury. And let's remember that he does have already an injury dossier. There have been, last year he did play 159 games, but the year before he played 111, 147 before that one, 100. So two different years. And that 2013 and 14, he played in 118 and 100 games respectively. So just keep in mind. We're talking about the escalation of salaries, and I know we mentioned this the other day, guys. It's a good day to put it in perspective one more time, that when this talk about his impending free agency began in the distant past, his agent was speculating about a $400 million contract.
Bobby, listen, he's an extremely talented player. I am not running down who he's been and who he might turn out to be, okay? And again, I love the idea of the Phillies-Nationals becoming an instant rivalry, because one he left one, he goes to the other, they're in the same division. This really, it hasn't ever happened quite like this, where he wasn't just a star in Washington. He was their first star. He was the face of the franchise. He was their leading man, the hair, the face, the swing, everything. So I like what this does for baseball. I do. I do think that if the Mets turn out to be good, and they think they're going to be pretty good, you've got four teams in the NL East now. And the Braves say, hey, don't forget us. Yeah, we won last year. We've got Ronald Acuña Jr. We're not going anywhere, okay? No. So you've got... You got two teams in the AL East and the Rays knocking on the door. You got four in the National League East. But he has hit 300 twice, 40 home runs once, 100 RBI once, and he's won an MVP award. So have a lot of guys. And so now, you know what? In a lot of ways, literally and figuratively, to paraphrase the words of the great Dave DeBuscher, now they've thrown the effing money on the table, and we'll see.
We'll see. I wonder if you guys feel that a baseball player can impact a team and the room the way a basketball player, say, can't. You know, and if so, does Bryce Harper bring that? You know, that's the one thing that I've always wondered. From a friend, he doesn't play in my town. And if a guy doesn't play in your town and you don't go and see him every day, it's kind of hard to judge us. I'll tell you, for example, Kirk Gibson on the Tigers was a force. And as long as he was on that team, everybody else played better because he was the guy who would literally march around the clubhouse and say, get your effing head out of your ass. You know,
he's not that guy, Mitch. I'll stop you right there. Bryce Harper's not that guy.
Right. So
from everything I know in baseball, he's not that guy.
That's my impression, too. He's much more, you know, his own legend. Do you take that into account when you give this kind of money to guys?
You should take
Bob, what did Bill Fitch once say about the difference between basketball and baseball? It doesn't matter if the left fielder knows the catcher's name in baseball.
Yeah, it's like a lot of things. It's got partial truth, and it's all depending on circumstance. To answer your question, Mitch, I think that you should theoretically, if you're going to be doling out this kind of money, you should be taking all these kind of things into consideration. And there's different ways of being that guy, too, because as Mike has continually pointed out, that though we acknowledge that Mookie Betts was the best player on the team and maybe in baseball last year overall, that J.D. Martinez had a tremendous ripple effect on that entire team. By virtue not only
Bob,
of his
don't
talent,
you agree? Mookie was the MVP, but the last year you could have had a different designation: most important player. And the most important player was J.D. Martinez.
This is a discussion we can have some other day about the whole thing about MVP as opposed to MOP or MIP. And I love that discussion, and we will have that some other day. But you're absolutely right; there should be a distinction.
I mean, it was ridiculous that J.D. Martinez wasn't one of the three. I know he was playing with Betts, that he wasn't one of the three finalists for the MVP last year. And nothing against Jose Ramirez, but come on, Bobby. I mean, it wasn't even close.
All right, well, let's shift gears from MIP, MVP, MOP, whatever, to MCP, most concerned player in the NBA. Maybe LeBron James, sitting right now at the 61 games into an 82-game campaign, so 21 games to go, 3 games out of a playoff spot right now, and nobody new coming to help him. There's nobody on the horizon. They're winning a game here or there that shows some moxie. Then they lose games that make no sense. You like when they lost to New Orleans and Davis wasn't even playing. And it seems like every game gets breathlessly reported, certainly by ESPN, about, you know, what's the temperature taking now of the LA Lakers? And LeBron will say, we need guys who are uncomfortable with being uncomfortable and this, you know, in a midseason loss, all of which stirs a pot that may just end up resulting with them narrowly missing the playoffs. If that should happen, my question to my esteemed colleagues is how much of a fail is that for LeBron James in Los Angeles, given the expectations, the contract, and what we thought when he got there?
Well, do you factor in the injury of Mitch and Bob? Because you have to admit that month they were starting to go good then, okay? And remember, at that time, the Warriors were kind of stumbling around, and the Lakers weren't all that far behind them. And that injury had altered the landscape for them this year. So, Bobby, I'll ask you, how much do you factor in that into your analysis of what has happened to the 18-19 Lakers?
Totally do. I'm one of these people that think that the cavalier dismissal of injury as a factor in sports by so many people. Well, everybody has injuries, and I'm sorry. Sometimes it is it is the reason. A lot of times, yes, I certainly do. I think
you got it right, Bob.
If and when they miss, and I think they're going to miss. If and when they miss, you can start right there. Oh boy, if they had him for those 18 games, I think they would have found a way to win a few of those games. Sure, absolutely, positively. But I thought it was going to be here's what I thought they were going to be. I thought they were going to be battling for the 8th spot. They were going to be somewhere in that 8-9-10 range. To start with, because they were in the West. If they were in the East, I would have said, no, of course they're going to make the playoffs. But I didn't honestly automatically slot them into the playoffs. I thought that they would be battling for the playoffs.
You are record-wise correct that their 30-31 would put them currently into the top 8 in the East, but only by a couple of games. I would add on to what your analysis was with regard to the injury. There's no question that those games, they were lost. But that, to me, gets factored into the whole picture of LeBron James at this age in Los Angeles. I don't want to be a broken record on this podcast. When you start having groin injuries, it's never the last one. And you can expect him from here on in to miss portions of seasons. I don't know that he's going to miss 15 games every year, but he might miss 30 games one year, too. He is not going to hold up for 82 games. He's not going to be the Iron Man. He's still made of flesh and blood. I saw an interesting article that I don't remember where it was earlier today about that he can't and doesn't want to play defense the way that he used to because of the energy that it expends. And you just can't expect to get that out of him before. Not that LeBron James was Defensive Player of the Year, but when he wanted to clamp down, he clamps down. He may not be able to do that for you anymore. And more importantly, you know, the NBA is a league of who's hot now and what's coming next, not what have you done in the past. So if he takes a non-playoff team into the offseason, is playing in Los Angeles with LeBron James viewed differently now by the potential pieces on the board than it might have been when he first announced that he was going? Does he feel and do the Lakers feel a little less A-plus level as an attraction and him as a talent than when he first got?
Well, what's interesting about that, Mitch, is that it was a dialogue at times this year that we never heard before, which is do people not want to play with him? And that's a new one. I mean, a year ago at this time, I don't think we would have believed that that would ever be uttered by anybody.
I think that's very real. More real than gets told because it's not a popular thing to say and, you know, people always want to be embraced. But I think there's a big undercurrent of that, particularly with other superstar players and other younger superstar players. Kyrie Irving, as crazy as Kyrie Irving is, and he's kind of nuts, but the emotion that he expressed and what he did ultimately by leaving with LeBron James, I believe he would not be the only guy his age to feel that way. Playing with LeBron James, of that talent. You put the guys who have that kind of talent on the same team with LeBron James, 10 of them, and 7 of them are going to want to play someplace else, possibly the way that Irving did, even though you're playing with arguably the greatest player of all time.
Wait a second. What scientific polling?
It's my scientific field poll.
You know what that sounds like? It sounds like one of those Rasmussen polls that Trump is always quoting.
I'm not the first guy to say 9 out of 10 guys will tell you. I went to 7. I didn't say 9. I left 3 out there.
He's one guy, and Bob, I think we can agree he might be one troubled basketball player at this point. Mitch, how is everybody going to feel about this if, say, Kawhi Leonard and Anthony Davis end up playing with the Lakers next year?
Then I'll say, remember when that podcast when I said nobody was going to play with them? I was wrong. I'm not going to say nobody's going to play with them. People are going to play in Los Angeles.
He went to 8 straight. finals. Come on.
I know. And that, but
so Mike, after 60 games, we're now going in LA with a fairly dysfunctional team, and a month out of the game, we've changed our opinion of the guy who across his professional career has been the greatest teammate in the sport.
Not changed our opinion no. of what he's done in the past. I'm talking about projecting what's going to happen in the future. And that record is in grave danger right now. Forget about the finals. Going to the playoffs at all. It's going to be a very strange playoff season if LeBron James is not in it. And this is the world of sports is a totally now moment thing. And if it's not 7 and it's 6 and if it's not 8, it's what there are. I'm saying, as Bob indicated, that there are guys who question what they have to give up in their own.
Don't drag
ego.
Bob into your evil will.
No,
Bob Ryan, the Hall of Fame.
Speak for yourself,
Bob. I introduced
Bob.
This into the conversation because it's a phenomenon it happened this year. That was raised. The thought that there were people out there that didn't want to play for him or were suddenly rethinking about the idea.
But what people other than Kyrie? That's what I'm asking you. People? It's like Trump saying. Many
Kevin
people
Durant.
Are saying.
Kevin Durant said it himself.
No, it's a prevalent thought, but the idea that it's a heretical thought that was unimaginable 365 days ago, but it did pop up this year. That's all I'm saying. I don't know how much.
Have you,
how
Bob
widespread
Ryan,
it is.
Or you, Mitch Albom? And factoring in his age and everything else, have these 60 games changed your opinion about what the rest of his career is going to be like and changed your opinion about what you thought was going to happen when he went to the Lakers?
Well, Mitch hit upon the injury thing, which I think is valid, and that defensive thing is also quite real, that he was accused of loafing on defense the other night, and he's conserving his energy. He's picking his spots in a way that he has not done before. And this is the mortality is setting in for him. I think that's a safe statement.
I'm going to kind of ride with him. Whether
he's still
makes the playoffs this year or not.
Right. Well, but I'm just.
Well, time passes very quickly in the world of sports, and you get old quickly, and ideas get old quickly, and franchises get old quickly and disappear quickly. I got a parting shot coming up about the Detroit Red Wings that fall from grace, and you know, a couple of years ago, you never would have thought of it. Things happen, and I say that missing the playoffs with LeBron James, who was a guy who, you know, I mean, took a Cleveland team to the playoffs that, you know, you could argue the first time around didn't have the kind of any more talent than he was. I mean, he's not surrounded by a bunch of total losers. There is some talent on the Lakers. They've gotten hurt too. You know, he's not the only one on that team's been hurt. In fact, his injuries probably are right in the middle in terms of guys who are 10 and 12 years younger than him and getting hurt and missing that many games too. So it's not all. And I totally agree with you, Bob. People who say, well, injuries are part of the game. Yeah, injuries are part of the game, and so is that injuries cost you a season is part of the game. I totally, totally agree. And people dismiss that too fast. I'm not saying he's not a great player. I'm not even saying he's not going to win another championship or two more championships or three. If he gets the right cast, of course he can. I'm just throwing the question out there. How significant is it that he goes from playing in all these finals to not even being in the playoffs in 1 year and not knowing who's going to join him? Because we all agree, I think, that if he comes back with this team next year, he's not going to make the playoffs either. So, because people are going to shift on the board in the West. So we're all saying he's got to get more talent in there with him or this LA experiment is a total flop. Are we all in agreement on that?
Yeah, but Mitch, here's the team that that started against the Pelicans the other night, okay? Kuzma, James, Ingram, Rondo, Bullock. Now keep those four names and take LeBron James off of that team, okay? They're probably a lottery team. I mean, where are they
like
going?
Yeah, like last year. Like last year before he got there.
And so I'm saying that with those guys, with this group, and Tyson Chandler and JaVale McGee and Caldwell Pope and all those guys, okay, give him that month back, and I believe that they are in the playoffs right now if the season ended right now. That's all I'm saying.
That's not
fair to evaluate the season without talking about that month.
None of us are. We're all saying that that month counted, but I'm saying that that month is likely to be part of the LeBron James story going forward, every year going forward. Remember, that he's for an NBA player, we forget how old he is and how many miles there are in him. He started hitting that hardwood and all the attendant pressure on your ankles and knees and all the rest when he was, 19 years old. And he's been at it longer than almost everybody in the league. And he is going to be on the hot spot for the next 20 games, if he's healthy and he's okay, to do what you correctly pointed out he started to seem to be doing before he got injured. He's got, except Lonzo Ball, who you could argue is as much of a detriment as he is an asset, he's got the guys there that he was able to do that with before. Can he whip them into a playoff run? Will that seriousness rub off on the rest of them? It seems to be a night-to-night thing. One night it looks like he's gotten them together. The next night they don't seem to put out that effort. I think the next 21 games and making the playoffs are going to be important part of his
life. Let me ask you guys a question. Let me just ask you guys a question. If and I understand that you have to factor in the possibility of injury, especially for a player his age. I get all that. But just for the sake of this conversation and the question I'm about to ask you, if he plays those 30 games, okay, and if the L.A. Lakers are right there right now with the Utah Jazz and the San Antonio Spurs in the 6-7 spot, are we even having this conversation?
Well, probably not, but this goes back to what Mitch is saying, is that we are going to be having this conversation with regard to his future availability and functioning powers as a result of the body mortality thing. I think
you're underplaying how big a story it's going to be if they don't make the playoffs.
Yeah.
A couple weeks from now, or however it's going to be, a month and a half, or however long it takes to play those 20 games. If LeBron James's team misses the playoffs, that's going to be all the conversation.
Mitch, I agree with you. I agree with you. But you know what? Somebody, a friend of mine once said that Twitter is where irony goes to die. Okay? What we lose more and more in sports, and I understand the nowness of sports. We all do. We've been at this a long time. Is that you have to, if he doesn't make the playoffs, you have to lend some context and proportion, because sometimes context and proportion are part of the graveyard of the modern sports of the injury and the month. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. All right, well, I threw the question out, and the question has been answered. That's what we're here to do. We're not here to convert anybody.
We can't solve all the world's issues.
Now, can I throw out some numbers for you and get a reaction here? These are the most reported numbers of the week. 5'10" and an eighth inch, 207 pounds, hand size 9.5. That, by the way, could describe many people who have sat in the panel of the sports reporters over the years. 5'10", 207 pounds, not distributed the same way, hand size 9.5. However, those are the numbers, and apparently all we're going to learn from Kyler Murray at the combine, since he's now announced that he's not throwing, he's not running, he's not doing anything but sitting, talking, and getting on a scale. And I found this really interesting because 207 pounds is way more than he's ever played at. He's gained weight clearly for a single weigh-in. That'll be his official number. So that teams think he's not slight and he can take a hit. But one of the reasons he's not going to run is because he's never played at 207 pounds, and he might be a lot slower. A lot, relatively, a couple ticks on a stopwatch, than he might be if he loses the 10 pounds again when he works out individually for teams. What do we make of this whole Kyler Murray situation?
Russell Wilson is 5'11 and 206 pounds, Mitch. Do you think either of those numbers have prevented him from being the player he has been in the National Football League?
No, but he also did the same thing from what I've read. You know, beefed up for the combine and then lost weight.
Okay,
to
what
to
I'm
run.
Saying is that inch or less than an inch? If and I don't see why anybody would be lying to us about the young man's height. Does it in any way? Does this make him a non-starter any more than Russell Wilson or Baker Mayfield?
Well, that's a question for these so-called, you know, these experts in the NFL to answer. And obviously, we all, as normal functioning thinking people, think it'd be stupid to worry about it. But some of them might worry about it. And the difference is 7/8 of an inch, guys. Don't forget that eighth of an inch that's in there.
It's important. Bob.
I have a question for you. Are either of you conversant with the concept of hand size to know what the 9.5 means? I'm not.
I don't.
All right. I just wondered. I don't know if that means they're smaller.
If you could tell me what your hand size was or my hand size was, then I might be able to have a comment.
I can't because not a thing that's ever been a factor in anything I've ever done.
I have no idea.
And by the way, Mitch, and again, because he's a small, gifted Heisman Trophy quarterback, Doug Flutie, not because Bob and I went to BC, becomes a frame of reference, okay? And I think Doug Flutie was shorter than, he is shorter than Kyler Murray, okay?
He is.
I was constantly amazed, having watched his entire career, when people would watch Doug throw the ball 65 or 70 yards and think that because he was that height, he couldn't have a strong arm. He had a big arm and he had big hands. I don't know, you know, I don't know what the count was on Doug's hands. And I just think that somebody's going to look at what this kid can do and not get fixed on the things that he's not. And I think he is going to be a star in the National Football League.
Mike, you just identified the whole crux of all drafts is the idea that people all too often worry about or conjure up things that they can't do rather than what they can. That I'm just throwing that out there.
That's
because it's a big money business and like movies and record business. Everybody's worried about making a mistake, as opposed to their success, because they're covering their own butt and they don't want, you know, it's a little bit of the nobody knows nothing thing that Mike is constantly quoting. You know, that airs in that falls into how you judge talent. I want you to just make a 2-inch distance with your fingers, right, as I'm doing right now.
No, I'm not going to do it. You can't.
Well, okay, I'm not doing it. And I'm telling you that it's so remarkably small. And then that's the distance between Drew Brees, who's 6 foot, Michael Vick,
right,
who was 6 foot.
100%, Mitch. 100%.
Those 2 inches. Now, those guys had pretty good careers. I think the number that they all want to see, and now there are measurables on this. The 40-yard dash is kind of stupid, because how many times does a quarterback run 40 yards? But, you know, there are other tests that they get for quickness and things like that. If he can run, if he's fast, if he's quick, you can compensate for your height. If you're slow and you don't have an alternative when a 6'5" lineman throws his hands up in the air, yeah, you're going to throw a pass
into
the guy's
arm. He's a streak of light, Mitch. Whether he put on weight or not, he's a streak of light. And I was having this conversation with somebody yesterday about Kyler Murray, a Giants fan, I know. And my parting shot is about why I hope the Giants take him, okay? You tell me another college football player of recent memory who could have made you keep watching the Alabama-Oklahoma game after it was 28-0 and actually making it feel like a game for a while. This kid did that.
Yeah, well, the critics are going to say he did it for 1 year, and how do we know that wasn't, you know, a career year? The advocates are going to say that kind of raw talent can't be denied. And somebody's going to take the chance on him, and I think it's going to pay off big for them. What's really interesting is the order, because what you have this year is a group of teams who basically all need the same thing at the top, which is a defensive pass rusher. You know, the Arizona Cardinals, the San Francisco 49ers, the New York Jets, who have now announced, by the way, that they'll trade their third round, their number three pick, if they get a hold load of other stuff, which puts not that the other teams might not too, but that puts in play a team that might need a quarterback who's further back. But generally, we've always watched these things. Quarterbacks end up right at the top. And you know, year after year after year after year, no matter how many times they talk about defensive linemen or offensive tackles, by the time the draft comes around, a quarterback ends up being the number one pick or the number two pick. Well, is Arizona really going to do that after having done that with Josh Rosen? Is San Francisco really going to do that after all that money with Jimmy Garoppolo? The Jets clearly aren't going to do it. They took their quarterback. Are the Oakland Raiders, who's number four, going to do that with their future? They got a zillion draft picks. That's not their biggest need. But again, is he a generational talent, Mike, that you would do that with? Tampa Bay? I would if I were Tampa Bay, because I think they've made a big mistake with Jameis Winston all this time. But I, you know, apparently the coach is sold on him. That brings us to your Giants and then the Jacksonville Jaguars. And then what, by the way, a very interesting discussion that's happened around here in the last couple of weeks about that the Lions should take this kid if he's available and move away from the Matthew Stafford era over the next couple of years and go for him. So it gets interesting at 6, 7, and 8, but will he last that long?
Well, the question, another question is, where's Nick Foles going to go? Okay, because he's not on the draft board, but he's a guy who's is on the board. And Mitch, if I'm the Detroit Lions, it's not like they haven't given it a full shot with Matthew Stafford.
Well, okay? Except he's got this huge contract for $30 million a year that it's not so easy to just, hey, move aside. You know, the NFL is a salary cap. This isn't baseball. And
don't you think somebody would take him in a trade?
At $30 million, with he's got like, he just signed that deal like a year ago. So it's got 7 more years on it or 6 more years on it. I don't know. I don't know that.
But I when we're talking, Bob, when we're talking about Kyler Murray, okay, you can't have the Kyler Murray conversation without talking about Russell Wilson, okay? And here's the thing about Kyler Murray. He ain't going to fall to the third round the way Russell Wilson did.
Oh, no. No. It's interesting that the other alternative for a team is a 6'3" guy from Ohio State. So we'll see how
that works. Who fits the profile, who fits the model of what.
And by the way, if Mike Mayock is officially on record as professing allegiance to Derek Carr. So we'll see.
Says he's a franchise quarterback, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. I'm just saying that.
And what a BC guy. Regard, Mike.
But here's Mitch and Bob. We've talked about this before, and when I go around to schools and talk to kids, I talk about the most well-meaning coaches all the way back at Little League. Okay, the most well-meaning, not the stereotypical loud Little League people who cared. And I was always fascinated that even they would get fixed on what kids couldn't do, as opposed to what they could do. And I'm just looking at what I believe Kyler Murray can do in the National Football League.
Yeah. Well, we'll see where they end up drafting. It'd be interesting if you had two or three teams like you did last year with quarterback needs right up at the front. And then
how about the Cardinals, Mitch? How about them having internal conversations? The 1 year after taking Josh Rosen, they might take this kid.
Well, that would be a very interesting thing to see. And quite frankly, I mean, he's got a rookie contract. So it's relative to quarterback contracts. It's not as much money as the Lions situation. So they've sworn that he's their guy, and it does make them look kind of stupid with having such a high pick last year and saying, okay, we're going to bail on him and we're going to start with another guy. But the order is going to be as interesting as the fact that Murray is out there.
Oh, yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah, you bet.
Yeah. All right. Before we get to our parting shots, just to finish up on football, Bob, since you're in New England there, any new reactions or thoughts on the Robert Kraft situation, on him pleading not guilty?
The official plea is not guilty, which we find interesting in that there is we're told that there is video evidence. He can't deny that he went there. There's video evidence. And what he did inside is, of course, the question. And there's supposed to be video evidence of what happened. He's now going against that.
Bob, don't you think he's banking that it's not? It will never see the light of day, and we can turn this into the old Marx Brothers line. Who are you going to believe, me or your lion eyes?
Or I think of one of my all time favorite movies, Guide to a Married Man, and that scene when Joey Bishop gets caught in bed with the woman, and then he simply gets out of bed, and the woman never say a word, and they both get undressed. They get both get redressed, and she leaves, and he goes and sits in the living room with his newspaper and a pipe, and he looks at his wife and says, "What?" it's priceless. By the way, it's a great movie. The worth seeking out.
By the way, Bob, and you referenced it before. Okay, the line, "That's my story, and I'm sticking to it." It is attributed to the Alex Hawkins when he was Captain Who with the Colts, and he was out all night with his buddies. He came home. His wife Libby's waiting for him to have breakfast, and he tells you this story about how he got home late and he didn't want to wake her, and he slept in the hammock in the backyard. And his dear wife looks at him and said, "Alex, we took in the hammock a month ago." And he sips his coffee and he says, "Well, that's my story and I'm sticking to it."
So,
these are all better than Kraft, by the way.
is that I think it is foolhardy for him to be the public face of this franchise 1 second longer, that he's got to step aside no matter what the judicial outcome of this is. He's been publicly humiliated, and it's a team that has a horrible PR image in the world to start with, and this is only going to exacerbate it.
So you're saying if they win another Super Bowl and Goodell has the trophy, you don't think he should be handing it to Robert Kraft? Robert Kraft shouldn't be on that podium.
Right. I think for the good of it should be handed to Jonathan Kraft.
Wow. Now that's Bob Ryan's opinion. Now I'm asking for Bob Ryan's prediction since he lives in Boston.
Oh, no.
Will that actually happen?
It's not going to happen. He's not going to go away willingly because, number one, he was already seen at the Oscar party Sunday night, so he's not exactly going to hide. But here's the thing about Robert Kraft, and I say this with the prelude that I owe him a personal debt of a great word of thanks for something he did very generously at an important time in my family's life. Now, having said that, I'm never going to forget that. But this is a man, and you have often heard the famous story. Ted Williams allegedly said that he wants to walk down the street and have people point at him and say, "There goes the greatest hitter who ever lived." That's the story. I've been saying for 15 years, Robert Kraft wants to walk down the street in Boston and have people point to him and say, "There goes the greatest owner who ever lived." He is a very big publicity conscious person with a massive ego, and he wants to be loved by one and all.
Bob,
and it's going to be very hard for him to step out of a
public. Isn't Patriots Nation Robert Kraft's base, and that there isn't the hysteria about this as that there isn't the hysteria about this with them that there is with, you know, say us? Okay.
Well, is there?
Mitch, I don't know. I was thinking maybe Patriot Nation is like President Trump's base, and they just don't care.
Well, I'm gonna make a prediction as to how big this is going to be and how much of a stain, based on something that has nothing to do with Robert Kraft. If the story ends up coming out about, and they really get into sex trafficking, and that the women who worked there were prisoners, and they profile them as being, you know, abused and held all but captive and the rest of it, this becomes a whole different story.
But that story is already part of this, man.
Well, yes and no.
I've heard it. It's been covered to death. I'm in Florida right now. It's been covered to death. That's bigger than the big names. That's the story here. The conditions under which these women were being forced to work, to sleep on their own massage tables, to eat off of hot plates. No, that's a huge part
of
the story.
That to me is the part that he can't just skate like other celebrities have about, shoot me. I get my sex in strange places. There have been many athletes in strip clubs and entertainers with prostitutes. And, after a while, it just fades away. But if he is linked to perpetuating this thing, which is not, that's not what he did. He wasn't running a sex trafficking ring, but you know how modern media is. You get associated with being a part of enabling this to exist, and it's as if you created it yourself. That's not so easy to just say, well, I still want to be around and be around. And the NFL is going to – the more people start connecting the NFL to helping to perpetuate the sex trafficking industry, the bigger problem they're going to have on their hands.
All right, and the thing, as I mentioned to last – I believe I mentioned that here the last time – is that it's going to be hard for him to disavow himself of any knowledge that this is the MO of the place, because he is, in fact, he's contributed – six figures in the past to organizations combating sex trafficking in such as this. So he's aware of the phenomenon. It's not like, gee, I never knew it was that's the way it was. No, he can't. He'll never be able to play that card. By the way, this lead story in the page one of this morning's Boston Globe is a very detailed description of the lives led by those women.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what I think is going to sink
today, right now, yeah, even as we
speak.
That's
the stuff I think is going to sink them. All right, let's get to our parting shots. Mike Lupica, why don't you lead us off?
Okay. I grew up a New York Giants fan in upstate New York in a world, this is hard to believe, guys, in a world before Sunday Ticket, when the only game you could watch on Sunday afternoons was the one the team in your part of the country was playing, and the Giants were my team. And by the time I was writing a column in New York, George Young and Bill Parcells were bringing them back to the kind of glory that they'd had when I was a kid, and the Giants were winning their first Super Bowl and then another with Parcells. And then came Tom Coughlin and Eli Manning, and a couple of games Bob remembers, one of them in Glendale, Arizona, when the Patriots were trying to be 19-0, and the Giants won another Super Bowl. They beat the Patriots once, did it again. But after the second one, they turned into the Giants of the 70s all over again. Now Eli is old, and they're trying to build around exciting young talents like Odell Beckham and Saquon Barkley. And I want them to go for Kyler Murray, whether he's 5'10 and a fraction or not. I want them to think big by going small at quarterback. You tell me you wouldn't want to see the three of those kids on the same field together.
Nick Cafardo was a friend and colleague who covered baseball for the Boston Globe. He collapsed and died of an aneurysm last week and will be laid to rest today. He was a thorough professional and entirely unpretentious. There wasn't a self-promoting bone in his body. He simply loved baseball and wanted to share his enthusiasm with his readers. Now, I knew he was really good at what he did, but I was somewhat unprepared for the tremendous outpouring of love and respect, not just from the journalistic community and his readers, but from those inside baseball, starting with the commissioner and including the likes of Pedro Martinez, who sent flowers to the wake. Red Sox owner John Henry stood in line with the rest of us to pay his respects last night. And Nick never realized what an impact he had. And he did this all by the simple expedient of just being himself. Day in, day out. To say he'll be missed is a colossal understatement.
The trade deadline recently passed in the National Hockey League. Here in Detroit, the only sound you heard was the air of a revolving door swinging out as a longtime Red Wing Gus Nyquist was sent away for draft picks. This follows a pattern of the Red Wings sending away talent for potential futures, and it almost surely harbingers a third year that the Wings will not be seeing a postseason. Now, I know on a national scale, this news, in fact, hockey news in general, doesn't register a blip. But Detroit isn't nicknamed Hockey Town for no reason. The Wings made the playoffs for 25 straight years from the early 90s until a couple years ago. 25 years that included four Stanley Cups. That's not spoiled. That's New England Patriots spoiled. There was a time when the trade deadline made the Red Wings, with all the money and no salary cap, could buy any talent they wanted. And many big stars joined the Wings in February, happy to come to a winning franchise and compete for a cup. This is after a team that in a single season, remember, 2002, had Steve Yzerman, Sergei Fedorov, Brendan Shanahan, Brett Hull, Nick Lidstrom, Luke Robitaille, Chris Chelios, and, oh yeah, in goal, Dominic Hasek on the same roster. That's an all-star team. Today, I challenge any non-Detroiter to name a single Red Wing. It just goes to show that all franchises can take a turn and get lost in the basement, trying to perfect a new process. We'll see if the idea of sending talent for draft picks works, but it sure is another cold wind blowing through the spring here in Hockey Town. That's going to wrap it up for the Sports Reporters Podcast, which we do every Friday and Monday. So thank you for joining us today. You can get this wherever you get popular podcasts, radio.com included. Until we see you on Monday, on behalf of Mike Lupica and Bob Ryan, this is Mitch Albom saying, have a great weekend.